This podcast is intended to support UK healthcare professionals with education. The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment, and patients are encouraged to consult healthcare providers, including nurses, for any medical questions or concerns.
Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional, where healthcare professionals and experts by experience discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice. I'm Hannah Patterson. I've worked in specialist care and I'm currently the Ostomy Care Associate Education Manager at Coloplast. Hello and welcome to the podcast, the final podcast of 2024. I can't believe I'm actually saying that. Now, today, to go through some of the highlights of the last year, I'm joined by my colleague, Paul Russell Roberts. Now, he's not joined me for a while, so I'm hoping he's going to behave himself now I've allowed him back on. Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Hannah? Would I not behave myself? I'm always behaving myself. And can I just say, this year's podcasts have just been absolutely amazing. It's been a real pleasure listening to them. Yeah, and I can't believe that we're coming to the end of season 10 of In Conversation.
I know. It's like the baby's all grown up. It's double figures now. Yeah, when you used to be at school, it was when you hit double figures. That was like meant you were getting older.
But can you believe this is, I think, episode 80 of your podcast series now. I can't say mine because you've been running solo on them for so long now. And as I say, you've done a fantastic job. Really, really have done a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you. I can't say this year has been some of my favourite episodes ever. And I know you've been having a listen to them, as you said, throughout the year. And I'm sure you've probably got some highlights that you've listened to throughout the year as well.
Yeah, well, as you know, as I said, you know, with 80 odd podcasts, but obviously we're only listening to the last year. And I think it's 24 episodes, some 20 odd episodes a year. So I've kind of gone through and tried to pick, you know, I would have just picked something from every single one, but I know that you shout at me if I go over time. Yes. So I've kind of picked five. One of them, there's a couple, but there's five kind of podcasts that I really want to pull out because they were just so interesting to it. And the first one is from the latest Ask the Ostomate. And I know that the previous Ask the Ostomate was fantastic. I know we got some really, really good feedback from that one. So, definitely the first bit. And I just want to, you know, just going to play a snippet from the latest Ask the Ostomate.
And my name's Amy Sharkey and I'm the Associate Practitioner from New Cross Hospital at Wolverhampton.
So as a stoma patient, we'd like you to know if there's anything that you would change within the service.
Or if you could recreate the service yourself, what service would you make as a stoma patient, knowing how effective services are within the NHS? And in the private sector too.
I feel like can of worms open everywhere. Who do I come to? Sophie, I'm going to come to you simply because working for the NHS, I think you've probably got quite a practical mindset on this as well.
That was such a juicy question. Exactly like that. You could literally just abbreviate with answers, couldn't you? So yeah, great question to Amy's. I think, firstly, the service could improve by offering sort of more of a tailored, holistic approach, like support right from the beginning, right from when you're told you're going to get a stoma. The NHS and the private sector obviously both do a fantastic job of providing medical care. We all know that, but there is a gap when it comes to the emotional and long-term wellbeing support. And you know, the more people I talk to that live with stomas, it just seems everyone's got the same story. And it makes me want to rattle the NHS and just be like, come on, look, and private, just listen to what we're saying that we need, because they just don't seem to do it. So if I could recreate the service, I'd change loads of it. But I would love to see stoma patients offered more of an ongoing education, like mental health support, regular check-ins post-surgery, because unfortunately, it was just my experience. I got nothing post-surgery at all. So definitely regular check-ins. And then maybe even like partnering with other companies, i.e. like corporate companies like Coloplast, to ensure that there's better aftercare. Because I think something could be bought in there where, you know, stoma suppliers could help provide sort of like a well-being service. But yeah, there's a lot of potential to bridge the gap between the NHS and private. So yeah, I think that way they'd be able to offer a better experience. So just let me run the NHS.
That's simple as that, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd like to come to you with this one as well, Brian. Obviously, being from Scotland, I'm really interested to see what your view on this is as well.
Yeah, I vote for Sophie to run the NHS. So I live in the north of Scotland, in the middle of nowhere, basically. I live, my close relative is the Loch Ness Monster. I live up in the mountains. And my council area is the size of Belgium. So that's the council. If you don't know how big Belgium is, it's the size of Wales. So that's a comparison. We've got one major hospital. So people are travelling hundreds and hundreds of miles here on very, very small, often one-track roads to get to and from appointments. So this might not make me very popular with stoma nurses. But one way that I would shape things up is I would like to see much more integration with primary care. I think stoma nurses engaging with practice nurses, community nurses, perhaps teaching them skills around managing skin issues, managing minor blockages, dietary issues around stoma care, you know, because it is where people go. People go to the primary care facility for, and I don't think there is much of a connection between stoma nurses and primary care, and I think that would help, particularly in rural areas, but I suspect everywhere. The second thing is a particular bugbear of mine, but I just want to try it out with you. In the hospitals that I visit, the disability toilets are a disgrace within NHS facilities. And I used to be a director within the NHS up here. So I would like to propose that stoma nurses take a visit round every disabled toilet within the hospitals or the units that they work in and find out how many of them are actually set up for stoma care. And I think you probably will be. I am horrified by the state of ours. And I would like to see stoma nurses write to the chief executive or the head of nursing in each of the trusts and say that you, on behalf of your patients, we'd like to propose this very simple request. It's already laid out there, the guidelines about what makes a disabled toilet stoma friendly, and hold them to account like that. So, two practical suggestions.
Sophie
will be in charge, so she can...
Are you writing it all down, Sophie? Are you writing it down?
Yeah, I'm making notes, don't worry.
Well, I think it says it all for itself, doesn't it? You know, and I think, you know, the Ask the Ostomate podcasts, I know that's not the first one. I think it's the second or the third one. It's fantastic. How do you find them? How are the nurses when you say, what questions do you want to ask?
I'll be honest. Initially, when I first ask a nurse, I normally try and collar a few of them when I'm going around ASCN, or this year as it was, WCET ASCN. And the first thing they do is almost freeze on me going, I don't know. By the second day, they're all coming up to going, I know what I want to ask. I know exactly what I want to say. And it's amazing how, given that little bit of time, there's actually so much that they do want to ask ostomates. One thing I've got to ask you, Paul, did you choose that particular question because you used to work at New Cross?
No, not. I would I ever do something like that?
Yes.
Yes, I would. Yes. No, mainly it was because I just, I've obviously had Sophie and Brian there, fantastic ambassadors, and all of the ambassadors that I know that you've spoken with are so passionate about stoma care and increasing. It's just one of those things. But I know that with Sophie and Brian, especially Brian, he's so eloquent with how he speaks, and it's so clear and so precise. And just that simple thing about just look in the disabled toilets. Are they stoma friendly? You know, absolutely. It's something that it's not something that is going to take you hours. It's not something you need a business plan for. And I think only by communicating with expert by experiences can you sometimes see the wood for the trees.
And the reason I went to Brian and Sophie was because they've both worked within the NHS in various fields. So I thought they're not just going to say something completely impractical and ridiculous almost. I mean, let's face it, given the chance, we would all redesign things a lot. But actually what they were both saying was it's doable, I think. It is doable.
It's a goal that's achievable. That's the thing. It's that achievable. You know, and as I say, it's not going to take hours and hours and hours. It's not going to take millions of pounds. It is just that look and do. You know, and I said, and that is something you can only get from expert by experience. And I think that leads me on to the next one that I want to have a little delve into. And that is one of your expert by experience podcasts. And it's the one with the lovely Fran.
Oh, Fran.
So let's hear a little bit from that podcast episode. So this expert by experience with Fran.
With my stoma, the biggest challenge is the fact that I sweat quite a lot. So getting bags to stick when you're exercising for like 3 or 4 hours constantly can be a little bit of a challenge. But having found the right bags, that's not so much of a problem. And the right kind of accessories, like I use a tape around the edges and extra things like that and some decent barrier wipes underneath. But that was the biggest challenge initially, was stopping things leaking just because of sweat. It's not so bad, I find, when I'm training, having to empty my bag constantly, because my ileostomy slows down a bit when I'm exercising, I guess because the blood supply to your gut's reduced when you're working quite hard. So I don't find I have to empty like in a race or anything. I can get through a race distance. If I'm training, then yeah, but that's no different to someone else needing the bathroom, really.
Yeah.
So that's, the stoma isn't, it's just a more of a challenge from a hydration and nutrition perspective for fueling and hydrating, because you obviously sweat and you need to absorb sugar to ride. So I've had to tweak what I eat and drink and be a bit cautious around that. That's probably the biggest challenge. And then catheterizing isn't really an issue. I can always shove some catheters, they're tiny, in like a bar bag or in a pocket. Again, I wouldn't need to go in a race, so it's not really a problem because I catheterize on a schedule. In fact, in some respects, we get tested by anti-doping, and it's kind of convenient in a way, not having to wait to need to pee. You just need to wait to have enough pee that they're satisfied.
You don't have to try and do the pressurized pee.
Exactly, in front of someone as well who's watching. So in some respects, silver linings. So yeah, it's just managing hygiene around that, because obviously if you're in sweaty kit and things, like just being really careful to keep it clean. Having the stoma meant I could then make the delayed games the year later. So I was able to do triathlon at their games, but it then was also why I switched from triathlon to cycling. And I switched from triathlon to cycling after Tokyo because my Crohn's just didn't like running. Whether it's because I've got a stoma, I don't think so, because there are lots of people with stomas who run and run long distances. I mean, look at Adele Roberts, she ran the marathon.
Yeah.
But for me, when I run, because of my, I think it's more related to my spinal cord injury, because I run with leg braces, my gait is very up and down and jiggly. Like there's a lot of movement. And I think that basically shakes my guts to the point that they object.
They don't like being jigged around.
Yeah, exactly. So I couldn't really train enough with running to be competitive in triathlon. But cycling doesn't have that same effect because you're just sat in a static position pretty much. So I switched to cycling because it's more sustainable. And I don't really miss the swimming. I like swimming, and swimming with a stoma is no problem, but I don't miss having to get up at 6 a.m. to get in a cold pool.
No, I'm with you on that one. I am not a cold person in the slightest. I like being warm. Can I just add something to this clip now? Because Fran, I absolutely loved it, and I'm so glad you picked up this clip. But since I recorded with Fran, Fran then went on to win a silver medal at the Paralympics in Paris, woo-hoo! Which is absolutely phenomenal. So, yeah, just to add to that, it's almost like a post-podcast story, really. So absolutely, and I'm so glad you picked up on that with Fran.
Oh, it was a fantastic. I love all of the expert bikes. I love all the podcasts, but I love the expert bike experience ones. And, you know, having that little extra bit at the end saying she did actually come back with a medal is a fantastic, you know, it's fantastic news. And it kind of, whenever I listen to the expert bike experience ones, I'm always reminded how privileged I am, we are, to work with these individuals who are willing and want to share their stories, who will share the good, the bad, the ugly, the ups, the downs. You know, I think we are in an incredibly privileged position. And I think anybody who hasn't listened to any of the Expert by Experience podcasts, or might have only listened to one or two, it's a point of view that you cannot get from reading a textbook, reading an article. You can only get it by listening to these individuals.
And the only way I can describe a lot of the time when I record with the expert by experience is I almost go on a bit of an emotional roller coaster within that one recording. So one minute I'm laughing with them, the next minute I'm almost crying with them. And then the next minute I'm almost feeling angry on behalf of them with how they've had failings and things like that. Honestly, I come out of those podcast recordings sometimes feeling emotionally worn out because of the emotions you go through with them. I always do enjoy it, but you're right, it is an utter privilege. And I do I come out of there, I say exhausted, but always on such a high when I've recorded with the ambassadors. They're just a phenomenal crew. They really, really are. I often refer to them as the superheroes.
They are. They honestly are the superheroes, and they raise the profile of Stomacare exponentially. And I think raising the profile of Stomacare, breaking the poo taboo, actually bringing stomas and Stomacare into the public eye is challenging sometimes. You know, it's not easy to bring up the topic. And on that, I think that the next clip, there was only one episode I could kind of think about.
Oh, I think I know what's coming.
And you couldn't get much more of a international, global stage than Lego. Lego's brand new innovation. And it's when you spoke to the innovation team.
As part of our design process at the Lego Group, we are really focused on making our experiences inclusive as we can. And that means, you know, we understand the immense impact that toys have in shaping children's views of the world and the importance of how they see themselves and how they see people around them. So that's already part of our philosophy, if you like, at the Lego Group. But then within the Lego Friends team, we work on a theme which is based in the real world. It's a theme based in a place called Heart Lake City. And there are characters in that city who are normal pedestrian civilians of the city. They're a group of friends. And then there are characters that interact with this main group of friends. And we have been on a mission, especially since we relaunched in 2023, to make sure that we're actually representing the world around the kids that we're, you know, talking to when it comes to designing our play experiences. We have a really amazing team of very dedicated designers that are coming up with new ideas for how we can represent different types of people around the world. And we have done lots of different things since we relaunched in 2023 in terms of designing for diversity and inclusion. But we had never done somebody with a stoma bag before. And we wanted to make the set something where this character would have a reason to show their stoma. So we waited for the water park to be the theme that Sarah was launched in. Then she can wear her bathing suit, and this is something that you see just naturally, because it's really important to us that this isn't a innovation in the sense that we're not going to go and shout about this to make sure that, you know, everybody knows we're doing this as a big company. What we want is for this to be discovered by the people it matters the most to, which is amazing, because, you know, just being here today, it shows that it has had an impact. And we want it to speak to those people authentically. We don't want it to feel like we're using that as tokenism or anything. You know, it's important that this whole thing is authentic. And so we had to find a way for Sarah to authentically show off her stoma, and that it would make sense in story for that to be the case. And so if she was in a shop or in a house or a restaurant, the first time we featured her, it might not have been as clear that this was a stoma. So it was really important when the water park came up that we took the opportunity to put her in there. That was because we felt that we want to represent the world, and we want to represent all kinds of people. And we had felt that there was an opportunity to represent people with stoma bags. So that's the first sort of idea that we had.
I'm almost here, and I can't stop smiling when it comes to the Lego Group podcast, because to me, having somebody that's had a stoma, to see stomas on toys and out in there in the big wide world, I almost feel emotional now even thinking back to that podcast, because it was such a big, big thing. And I'm so, I keep saying it with all the clips, but I really am glad, because it was my highlight really of the year, that not just for the podcast itself, but actually what that podcast, why that podcast was there, why it was there, and to see it, a stoma on a Lego character is just, oh, it's amazing. And not a character in a hospital bed either.
It's that normalization. And it's, you know, they say with kids that thoughts, ideas, they're bred into them, you know, they're learnt. And I think this normalization is so vitally important, starting at such a young age as well. I know Lego is ageless. There is no age limit to Lego. But, you know, predominantly kids, you're looking at children with Lego, and just being able to normalize it, I think, is just fantastic.
Now, it's funny you should say that, because I did pick a little clip out myself from the Lego Group podcast, and that is just exactly what you were saying there.
They are totally spot on with, you know, actually why we're doing this, which is to start a conversation, whether it's somebody that you know who has a stoma, or whether it's your mum or your dad and you're a kid playing with it, or whether it's you yourself. Like, the most important thing is that it starts the conversation. And I know with my own kids, when they see these boxes and they open it, that they ask me about the characters. And I think it gives parents a good reason to explain that everybody's different, and not to be embarrassed by asking questions. Like, I really think we celebrate the inquisitive nature that children have, in like, we want parents to also take those conversations. There's nothing to, you know, be embarrassed about to ask these questions. And so, yeah, it's just amazing to hear them talk about that as well.
I don't think you could have picked a better clip to follow on my one. It's just,
I know.
I think that whole episode was just so powerful in a really positive way. It was such a positive, powerful, and very different to the other ones as well. You know, the other two that we've spoken about, you know, yes, you know, Franz was incredibly positive in respect of, you know, she's an Olympic silver medalist. You know, you can't get much more positive than somebody saying, I've got a stoma, I catheterize, but I still can win silver at the Olympics. And then you've got this Lego one, which is just positive normalization, bringing it out. And I was really, really touched, inspired by the way that they did it subtly, but without hiding it. It was just, yeah, it's she's got a stoma. You know, it's a natural, you know, it was fantastic. I think it was just positioned fantastically.
Absolutely. And as I said already, it was for fact for me. I think it would have been very easy to bring a character like Sarah in a hospital, you know, Heart Lake City, the hospital or something like that. It would have been a very, very easy way to do it. But to embrace it in such a positive way, amazing, amazing. Yeah. And I'm still buzzing about it now. And I still admit the Heart Lake City Water Park is on my Christmas wish list.
You never know what Santa might get for you.
Am I on the good list, though?
I hope so. Hopefully you're on the good list. There's two more episodes that I just want to,
it's a bit like This Is Your Life a little bit.
It is a little bit like this is Hannah Patterson, This Is Your 2024. So
is it a bit like Michael Aspel with the big red book?
I if I had a big red book, I would be holding it right now. I always wanted to know what was in Michael Aspel's big red book, but besides that, anyway, back onto the topic of podcasts. There's a topic which is incredibly close to my heart. I'm very open about my previous mental health problems. And one episode in particular I found really, really powerful from a personal point of view, and that was the Men's Mental Health podcast. So here's just a little snippet from that one.
Do those statistics ring true with you, what you've seen within your career?
Very much so, and sadly they're not new statistics. Those have just been year on year that we see that's the way things have gone in regards to men, and the way that they're not contacting services, they're not reaching out. There's a lot of campaigns out there presently for men to do so. And there's been innovations where people have put kind of messages on beer mats and, you know, where people can visibly see them on against urinals in kind of toilets in football grounds, just to try and kind of connect with men, to get men to talk and to kind of discuss these issues. Because unless it happens to some of the men, that they've never come across that before, and they won't have known, and they feel that they're the only ones. But like I say, those statistics year on year are still very, very high.
Oh, it's showing, like I said, that they're not changing. There's not, so although there's conversations going out there, it's not impacting the statistics out there, which is so sad. Now, I know you said, Ben, in your introduction, if you're there, that you have suffered with your mental health when it's come to, you know, your intimate health cares with your Crohn's and your stoma, and again, you add the two together, it is like a fire pit almost. I mean, I say fire pit, it's, you know, bonfire night's just been and gone, so it kind of seems an appropriate bit of terminology as well there. But how did you find, were the people you could talk to, did you know there were services out there you could call upon?
I've got people that I can talk to. I've got my wife that I can talk to. I've got colleagues that I can talk to. I think as a guy, there's a bit of reluctance to talk sometimes. I certainly bottle stuff up a lot for longer than I need to. Probably worst of all from my wife. I thought it was not time to sort of talk to her initially, and things will sort of bottle up a little bit. And I suppose my normal vent is a few people that I would talk to at work in the staff room, and that's where it probably normally starts to come out. And once I've opened up there, I find it easier to start to sort of process it as well myself. I find it quite confusing. I don't really know what the problem is a lot of the time, and so I'll kind of have a focal point that I think is that's the thing, and it's not really the thing, and I fixate on one bit. And yeah, so talking about it is really important. I don't know, it's hard. It's something that I've never had really, really bad issues, I don't think, but I've definitely had a few issues that I've had to work through. Did I really know where to go? Not initially. Again, quite fortunate through my employment that I'd remembered that we'd had an email a few months before that we'd basically got access to some mental health like therapy stuff. And so I managed to sort of get in touch with them. And that was what sort of helped me set the sort of course in motion to open up more and for me to unpick that mess that I'd kind of got into. Other than that, would I really know where to go to? I don't know if I would really. I think if I hadn't have just had that email and knew that it was through work, I don't really know where I would have gone. I've got young kids, and I think as soon as we had kids, we kind of put the kids first, and I then kind of not lost, but I just sort of moved away from a lot of friendships. So I don't really have like a group of guy friends that I can kind of chat to. So it's not like I don't go to the pub, I don't have a group of people that I can kind of like, all right, lads, come on, let's, you know, what's going on? And I think that that makes it worse as well. And that's where the internalization comes. So, yeah, finding some outlets is really key.
Oh, I still find that so, so hard to listen to in a way. Those, and I know they spoke about the statistics there. Oh, I've still got these statistics ingrained in my head that I spoke about. And it was the fact that 3 times as many men die from suicide as women. And the fact it's the leading cause of death in men under 50. And those statistics, I feel, are just ingrained on my head now. For you, I can imagine as well being quite a tricky thing for you to listen to as well.
Yeah, it was. It was a really challenging. And I think, and that's challenging in a positive way for me to listen to, because it was that realization of the things that I have been through previously. And I can remember just sitting there listening to, you know, normally I listen, you know, when I'm listening to the podcast, I'm normally either in the car, just, or, you know, cleaning up, pottering around the house, pottering in the garden, etc. But I purposely made sure I listened to this one quietly, if you know what I mean, thinking, you know, well, what's this going to be like, just to give myself that space. And it was a real time to reflect. But I think it was such a powerful, powerful episode. And I think connecting it to nursing, connecting it to stoma care as well. Men are, you know, again, whether there's research out there, I'm talking main, you know, from personal experience and from years of practice. Men, a lot of men are useless at talking. We don't open up. We don't talk. And I think as healthcare professionals, when we ask a question, we shouldn't always accept the answer that we get straight away. You know, it's the, how are you doing? I'm okay.
It's almost like a default response. Isn't it's a it, default. People?
I'm fine. I'm okay. And, you know, I often talk about the nurse's spider senses. You know, when somebody says something, yet the hairs on the back of your neck, they stand up and you just think to yourself,
nope.
Something else is going on. What is it? And what I would say is my plea to nurses, and again, it comes to from you know, whatever gender, please, when you know, if somebody says, are you okay? And they say, I'm fine. Just ask again, you know, give people that opportunity to talk, give them permission to talk. And within your clinic service as well, have a look at your literature, have a look at your notice boards. And I think it was Ben that was saying things like things on beer mats. I know you don't have beer mats in hospital clinics, but in urinals, on the back of toilet doors, on the men's toilet doors, is there something that says, you know, do you need to talk? You know, here's a QR code, here's a telephone number. It doesn't cost a lot. A lot of these men's mental health charities, they will send you posters, they will send you business cards, they will send you everything. And if at all possible, yes, we've got to be careful with infection prevention and that sort of thing. Laminate the posters, do anything to make sure, just to get it up, to give those male, you know, the male patients that option if they want it, to say that they're not on their own.
It almost goes back to the very first clip that you pulled up from Amy and Amy. They're asking about the service. Actually, what we're talking about there, it's not unachievable. We're not asking to build massive walls or anything like that. It's all little things that are doable. But it's the old adage, is it? It's the little things that can make the big differences sometimes.
Exactly. You know, and it is. It's the little things are the big things. And just by having that one poster, that one little permission saying to somebody, it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to struggle. You're not on your own. And I'm not wanting to sound melodramatic, but if you think of it this way, that having that poster on the back of the toilet door, by having that, you know, giving one person permission can save a life. And we talk a lot about health promotion, you know. This isn't complex, but hopefully if you can save one man from being one of those statistics that you said, you know, I think, you know, it's worth it. you know, half an hour, you can save one per, you know, easily save one person's life. Yeah. And, you know, I think it was a very, very powerful episode. And so, you know, again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for doing that one. You know, as I say, it's one of my all-time favorites from it for personal reasons. I think it's one of my all-time favorites, which leads me on to one of your, what I think is probably one of your all-time favorites, bar the Lego, by all the expert by experience ones, but besides Ask the Ostomates, besides every other one. And it's actually one of the latest podcasts. I think it has probably created the most noise, the most interaction, and generated for you the biggest to-do list.
I know where this is going now.
You have ever had. You know, I think, you know, you came into 2024 knowing it was going to be a busy year, and you are exiting 2024 going into 2025 with probably one of the biggest to-do lists you have ever had, pretty much based on the back of this podcast. And that podcast is Pregnancy with a Stoma.
I would say for the first about 20 weeks, I didn't really have to do much. I was just as I was, products were the same, other than having nausea from a pregnancy point of view. But bowels wise, I was absolutely fine. Nothing changed. And then at about 20 weeks, I started noticing a few changes. So I noticed that I had sort of like the sensation and the feeling that my stomach was struggling to pass things. That was the only way I could describe it. Things were still passing, but I felt like I was just really aware of my stomach. So it was almost as if things were getting a little bit stuck, but managing. That happened for a couple of weeks, and then I started with some bag leaks. Now, I've been really lucky that in the 4 years, I've had minimal bag leaks. I did at first whilst I was working out what products worked for me, but then I've been fine. So that was really unknown to me. I'd had a really bad bag leak at work and I had to go home. And I thought, is this stoma? Is this pregnancy? Is this IBD? I didn't really know. So I phoned the stoma nurses for some advice, and they said it can be really normal in pregnancy to notice these changes. So you can get like abdominal pain. You need to be more careful with what you eat. You can have obstructive type symptoms. And I think that's what I was getting. Because as the weeks went on, I was then accompanied by the pain as well. So I was getting these like strange bouts of abdominal pain, which I've never had before. And then after this episode of abdominal pain, I would then get a bag leak. So it was as if I was getting like these obstructive type symptoms. So what they had advised at the time was to try, you know, a bit more of a low residue diet and be careful of what I'm eating. So that's what I did. And it did make a good deal of help, but it didn't solve it completely. I was still just, things weren't right with my bag and my products. So then I reached out to Coloplast and spoken to one of their advisors who was amazing, spoke to her a lot, and she advised that I, number one, changed the template of my bag, because with my stomach then starting to grow, my stoma was bigger. And it wasn't obviously bigger. This was the thing. So it was hard because I couldn't really tell that it was obviously bigger. But when I measured it, it was. It had got quite a bit bigger.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly that template can change without you even... noticing. And it isn't until, like, say you measure it, like, oh gosh, that has changed a lot.
Yeah, and I think because it was so gradual as well, you don't notice it. So I changed the template. That was the first thing I did, and that was really, really helpful. Things felt more comfortable. I still things I was noticing, like seepage under the base plate, so not full bag leaks, but like seepage and then itchy skin and things like that. So that was happening. So then I went back for more advice from Coloplast, and we reintroduced one of the Brava seals, which I have used in the past before, just to try and give a bit more of security around where my stoma was. So I've been doing that, and that has really helped. So I've increased the template. I've started to use a seal, and I'm careful about what I eat. And so far, fingers crossed, good. I'm doing all right. So I had the planned cesarean on the 2nd of January, as we planned, had it on that day. I didn't have a cesarean with my last pregnancy, so that was a new experience, but it was all fine. It was really nice and relaxed, and I had colorectal surgeons on call if they needed anybody. But once they started the cesarean, they said everything looked absolutely fine. So they just proceeded as normal. There was no issues. It was really good.
Fantastic. I suppose an interesting thing for me is, how have you recovered? Because you've obviously had your stoma surgery previously. How did you find recovery post C-section surgery compared to post stoma surgery? How did you find the difference between the two?
A lot easier. The cesarean recovery was a lot easier. Even though I had a baby to look after as well, it didn't feel like how I remembered the stoma surgery, but it was fine really. I recovered quite quickly. You know, I was up and about straight away that afternoon, and the scar's really small, and yeah, it all recovered well, and my stoma pretty much went back to normal quite quickly as well.
Fantastic. And again, when it comes to your products, have you had to make any product adjustments now? Because the listeners can't see you, but you look absolutely fantastic, Beth. You really do. You would not believe you've not long had a baby. You look like you've just pinged back straight away. Have you had to make some adjustments again to your stoma routine?
So what I did was I had to make my base plate, like the template, larger. So I took those with me into hospital, but I had to spend about 4 or 5 days in hospital. After a couple of days, I realised that was already too big, and the stoma had started shrinking back down to what it was prior to being pregnant. So I just basically went back to my old template, and that is just fitting fine again. So right back to what I was prior to pregnancy. And I probably went back to that once I was home, for definite. So yeah, like a week after I had him, my stoma was back to normal, and I just went back to all my old products.
Yeah, you're right. This one has been, it's given me a massive to-do list, but in the most wonderful, wonderful way. So I really enjoyed this podcast from the point of view. I felt a bit like I was able to do my time machine part, because I initially recorded with Beth the first. So the clip that you played there was the second part of the podcast. So the first part, Beth was still pregnant. And then we kind of did a bit of a fast forward in time to when little baby Robin was with us, and we spoke then. So it's like a double header within one episode. It was a really great conversation, hearing all the changes that Beth made. But again, it goes back to things being doable and manageable, actually.
Yeah, it was a wholesome podcast. It felt wholesome. It felt very natural. And Beth's got such a lovely talking voice anyway. She's so natural, isn't she, when she's talking?
She has. I could just listen to Beth talk about everything all day long, really, because she's just got a voice that just relaxes you and puts you at ease. You can tell she's a nurse herself.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She really is fantastic. And, you know, as I say, on the back of that podcast and on the back of the pregnancy webinar, we've got a lot more stuff coming out in relation to pregnancy with a stoma. Basically, what happened was, and again, not stealing your thunder and not giving too much away, but there was so much noise created after it. You know, so many nurses have been in contact, I know, with you,
yeah,
and saying, we need more information. We need more. Please give us more information. So without giving too much away, what can we kind of look forward to?
There is going to be more. Basically, that's the all I can say at the moment, but there is going to be more coming. There is, like I say, we did almost on the back end of this podcast, I actually did this pregnancy with a stoma webinar with the lovely Rachel as well. And yeah, there is going to be more coming involving our experts by experience, such as Beth and Rachel, but also looking at reaching out to clinicians and other people as well, and really just getting you guys, the nurses and the patients out there, a few more resources when it comes to pregnancy and stomas.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. As I say, I could have picked another 30 clips, but I know that if I'd have gone for any more, you'd have shouted at me. So I want to say on behalf of me, before I hand this podcast back to its owner, I just want to say on behalf from me, thank you so much. It's been yet another fantastic year of podcasts. And speaking on behalf of nurses listening, you know, I'm sure I'm not speaking out of place when I say thank you so much. You know, really, really insightful, really powerful podcasts, so many different topics, wide, varied topics. And I know that a lot of ostomates also listen to our podcasts. So, you know, I'm sure they're going to say, you know, thank you on behalf of them as well. But, you know, and thank you to everybody who's taken part in the podcasts. But I'm not going to steal your thunder with that. So, as I say, I just want to say thank you so much. Thank you for taking me along on this journey with you. It's been an absolute privilege. And I'm going to hand over to you now.
I think when you're doing them sometimes, you forget the power that they've had. And actually listening back to some of them from the year, I know I said a bit ago about the emotional roller coaster, but I kind of feel the same again now. I feel like I've been through an emotional roller coaster again in the last sort of 40 minutes or so. But it's made me excited for next year. And I will echo what you said. Thank you to everyone that's taken part in these podcasts with me. I couldn't do it without my wonderful guests. And thank you to all of those of you that have listened, whether you've listened to one, two, or you've listened to every single one. Thank you. And I suppose all that is left for me to do now is to sign off for 2024. Wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I will be back with more Stoma and Continence Conversations in 2025. Thank you for listening. To see more of the wide variety of education we offer, please visit collarplusprofessional.co.uk. See you next time.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is a Vibrant Sound Media production for Collarplus Professional.